Thank you. Thank you, scholars. Listen to the sister. I feel like I should just go out the exit door here. All I've done is survive for a very long time, but gosh, and her exhibit? I mean, wow. I don't even want to read anything I brought up here. But, you know, I loved her concept of unfolding because I'm always tied in a knot wherever I am. I'm a large man, and these seats are small. And wherever I go, things are small because I'm big, tall and wide. But today I was asked to come and speak about my time at Pride and how I ended up creating a scholarship. So I'm going to jump into that. I swear it won't be too long, but I got some notes here because if I get freestyle, we'll be here all night. So I came to Pride when I became aware of Pride when I co-wrote a grant when I was at Brother to Brother. And Pocan was actually a faction at that time, each race had like a group that they were in. And I was in Brother to Brother. And when I came to Seattle, I had tried volunteering for several different places, but unlike San Diego, where it's like, you're a warm body and you're here and you want to do some work, Seattle was very different. When I showed up, they looked at me and they, you know, would say, well, you want to fill out an application? And I thought, what? You got that many people around here volunteering that you don't need anybody? Okay, well, I'll go take my butt somewhere else. But Brother to Brother embraced me. And so we had something where we wanted to get some money, and you had to write a grant. And Pride was one of the funders, like the funder, then for a grant to get something. So we wrote a grant, got together, worked real hard on it. We thought we'd crossed all our T's and dotted all our I's, and we got it all nice and shiny and printed it out. Somebody had a little bubble jet printer, and we got it all set nice and sent it in. We're like, yeah, we're going to do this. We're going to get this little bookcase, and we're going to have our Black history. We got some Langton Hughes, some Blank Renaissance. It's going to be great. And then it was rejected. This is like 95 or 96. I was like, well, those people don't know what they're doing. It's obviously, you know, the man holding us down again, but that's okay. We're going to move on. But that was one of my funky experiences when I first came here. But I always was raised to do something, pitch in, participate. I grew up under a woman who was, and I had both parents, but my father was in the military, so my mother was the one who dragged me to all kinds of things. And if we weren't fighting for right to vote, fair housing, a living wage, a woman's right to control her body, all those other things, which are all going on still today. And that was when I was a little boy in the 60s. Still happening. It's like, anyway, I ended up, after this was denied, a couple of things. I had a dear friend, Richard, who was very sick, and he eventually ended up passing at Bailey Boucher. And my relationship of 6 years also came to an end. And it was a really rough time, and so I just was kind of, just felt as if my soul was crushed and burned, and I just was kind of walking like a zombie. But that was when I came back into the Pride sphere again. And they were like, hey, you know, why don't you come work on our grants and scholarships? And I thought, yeah, I'm going to work on those grants. Oh, yeah. I'm going to find out about those applications and figure out what it is y'all are doing. And I'm going to be the black hand saying, yeah, we're going to do this. So I came on down and worked really hard at it. And it came into my life when, you know, I just had my cat, my home, and my career. So I had some free time. They didn't realize what they were getting into. So tenacity is my super strength. That and listening. So anyway, got work on it, worked on grants, and at that time, grants and scholarships was the same thing. And grants was two cycles a year, and scholarships was one. After a year of working on those things, they approached me and said, hey, you know, you should come to our board of directors. I was like, okay, all right. Again, I'm going to be the black hand. I'm going to see all that paperwork, and I'm going to make sure we equitably fund, you know, thinking that I was bringing all this change. And it's true, there was a friend of mine was working there, but it was good to have a voice. And at this time, I-200 had just happening. So one of the first board meetings I went to, there was a big discussion about that, really heated discussion. And it was interesting, as I sat at that table of privilege, But you know, take a second. You can have money and not do anything. So these folks were there, committed to do something in the community. The only challenge they'd ever had, and I don't say that to belittle, but was being denied access because they were gay. Otherwise, they were able to do almost anything they wanted, and they had the careers they wanted and things like that. And so they were at that table, but I-200 was a really divisive thing as we talked about it, and it came, we should do something about this. We should engage in some way. And several people were like, well, you know, this doesn't really affect us. And I was like, you're right, it doesn't affect you. But it affects everyone else who's not you and who speaks out and is their true selves. And, and I can't choose to just be quiet and not swish when I go down the street. I'm still a Negro, a black man, a big, thick, tall black man who squeezes into seats when he goes places. So I felt it was very real, and I went home mad. I was like, you know, this is exactly the same kind of bullshit I thought would happen when I got here. But my friend who worked there called me, and he said, you should come back, and you should engage, and you should stay. And I've been telling other people that for years, because you can't just get frustrated mad. You have to stay, engage, teach, open their mind. They'll open your mind. You know, I thought just because I grew up in Virginia and, like our speaker, came across America, a proud sissy, there were so many things I didn't know about life and about being, and although I saw myself as a secure gay man, I didn't know truly what it was about the experience of a woman. I didn't know what the experience was, especially for my trans brothers and sisters, and what that was like, and just so many things. And another thing that I learned about was bisexuality. I didn't get that at all either, because I thought, you know, well, they just won't commit. But that's totally a whole other ball game. So you have to engage and talk to people to grow, you know. All right. So working on grants, there were stories. The best part about the grants and scholarships was the stories touched my heart. And we have these amazing scholars here today who I'm all sure have a great story as well. My own scholar who got my scholarship this year is studying undergrad at public health, and that happens to be what I work in. So I'm like, yay, go sister. The stories that I heard were amazing, and one of those stories I heard in working on grants committee, we were flipping through them, and there was this one grant from a church. And everybody's looking at it like, oh, grant from a church? What's a church doing putting in here? And many were feeling their own experience, you know, how a religion had pushed them away, smacked them down, devalued them, and they couldn't understand why they would even apply. And me being a closet Christian, because as the sister said again, I'm so glad you talked tonight. I'm like not even reading my notes, I'm going off the top. I grew up Christian in the South, and I spent my summers in Alabama, where my mother's comes from, Tuskegee, Alabama, and I grew up in Virginia, and so that was a very Christian umbrella, and she's right. You did have to kind of negotiate that, but I learned very small that Jesus loves all little children, yellow, red, black, and white. There was a little song we knew. So to me, it was like, well, God doesn't make mistakes, and I'm here, so it's other people who are stuck in their interpretation of the Bible that keep me away. But my other friends felt shut out, and they were kind of Christian phobic, if that's a word. So I was a closet Christian. So I'd go to all these things and just wouldn't mention that, and I'd sneak off to church. And at church, of course, I had to still down and be myself, or hide from being myself, but just praise God. And then eventually I just stayed home because I thought, well, Jesus is in my house anyway. We'll just talk when I'm making breakfast, when I'm using the Swiffer, or pulling some weeds, or you know, whatever I'm doing. This story and finding out about this grant that was fascinating was it was for a refrigerator in this church. And that's because in this small community, it was where anyone had a meeting. The Duck Lovers Club, the labor organizations, the church ladies organization, and the LGBTQA folks were also there. Yeah, I can say it because I've been around a long time. So, that was where everyone came. That's how the whole community, and when we went out there, one of the things with the grants, they would encourage you to go out to see where the grants were given and meet the people. And this amazing woman with a big hat and a light print dress knew everybody in town. She had this big white car, and she was like, oh, you know, this is so-and-so, these are the gay folks that gave us the thing for the fridge, and, you know, all in all, and we got introduced to everybody in that small town, and it was just amazing, which is why you have to read these grants, and if you have a chance, grants or scholarships, when they have the celebrations, because they're, while I was here, was statewide, now it's 5 states, go and check it out, because you'll meet some great people who are on the front lines of change. Although we're here, there's still plenty to do here. We're kind of in a privileged space. The scholarships that scholarship stories were also compelling. One that I wanted to speak about tonight was a student who was from the backcountry of Louisiana. And he came to the idea that he was a bisexual man. And he went home and told his family he was bisexual. They said, well, your family, we love you. You okay. Then he thought about it more. He said, you know, I think I'm gay. So he went home, told his family, and they said, well, your family, we love you. It's okay. And then he realized, in fact, that he was a woman. And her family said, your family, we love you. It's okay. And then finally, she realized that she was a woman who was a lover of women. And her family said, that's it. You've lost your mind. We can't go any further. We can't do this. And that was why she was here. She had been a veteran as well, and she was here. She was going for a scholarship, and she got one to become an artist. But that's what she wanted to do, and I thought, you know, well, her family should, I told you, your family should get some credit for coming way down that street with you, but then they just got to where they couldn't ultimately handle the idea of a transgender lesbian. It was just more than they could take, and that's okay, because, you know, you bring people as far as they can come, and then you just have to let them be themselves, right? So in 2000, I was doing this work. This was invited to the board, worked on grants, grads, and scholarships split because it got bigger, and then scholarships was what I was doing, became the chair of scholarships, and worked on that, and it grew. I think when I started doing it, it was about 40,000, and I don't remember what it was by the time I left, but it grew exponentially. I went home in 2000 to visit my family. My niece had just been born, and I was there hanging out with my mom, and we were chit-chatting. She's like, well, what are you doing now? And she asked the kind of nonprofit work I was doing. I told her I was working on scholarships and how it was at Pride, and I particularly told her, I said, you know, there's a scholarship called the Brian Day Scholarship, and it's for black gay men in the Pacific Northwest. And she's like, really? Wow, that's interesting. She said, but what's the one for black women? I said, you know, that doesn't exist yet. And I said, you know, you're rewriting your will. There's no reason you couldn't do a scholarship for, you know, it's my tentative ask of the woman who held me close and made me the big old guy I am today. So I felt safe approaching her, saying, you know, you could do this. And she's like, that sounds like a very good idea. I think I could do that. And so she decided she was going to do that. But the next summer, she died suddenly, and it didn't happen. It was just in process. So I took up the mantle, and I began the Dolores Carter Hampton Scholarship for LGBTQA Women of Color in the Pacific Northwest. And I wanted to... My mother was always about women of color and how they had to have pride. You know, coming from the South, a lot of women didn't take pride or weren't taught to take pride in themselves and weren't taught to think that they were beautiful and weren't taught to that who they are is beautiful as they are, however they come. And she loved that. And when she would come visit me wherever I lived, she'd see young sisters, and she goes, wow, they're all cute and fun, and they're out there doing things. I mean, they're not stuck. And she loved that. So that's why she was into this scholarship, and that's when I did it. I truly thought of her, and I wanted to do that. The three big areas of her life were dance, education, and women's health, political science. And I just also wanted to share her unconditional love of me. Because no matter what anyone said or did, you know, she's probably about as tall as this woman to my right. But I feared her physically. And I had a dad that was a colonel in the army. He survived 2 wars and took a couple of people down with his own 2 hands, but I still feared her completely. And that's, I guess, what I really wanted to say is just these scholarships that we have here, we have a general fund, and it gives to all different folks. And then we have named scholarships, and those are set up with a particular person in mind, and whatever their work was or whatever their activity that they did, it might be set up for that. Athleticism, oceanography, career, in my case, and my mother. But whatever you give, it results in these young people we have here today. They're going to be the next generation. You know, we stand on the shoulders of our forebears, and this is how you do it. You put it forward. And I'm not a rich man. I had even less money than when I started this. I work for the county. I have great benefits, but I'm not getting paid anything. And yet I still live in Seattle, you know? That's tenacity. I put them pennies on top of each other, and I get there. Okay? That's right. That's right. So you all can do that, too. Put your pennies and dollars together and give to support these amazing individuals and the, all kinds of incredible stuff they're going to go do. Thank you very much.
I do have to move it down just a little bit.